Hey there, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Monday, May 21st, 2007, and you are listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, Dr. Dick. That's me. Today's podcast is brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You will find a link to this great sex resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. You'll be able to watch a load of really swell educational and enriching videos right from the comfort of your own home. You'll find scads of titles, schlepping out to the video store to pick up your educational smut or your plain old smutty smut is so last century, don't you agree? I have a really great show for you today, but before we begin, I'd like to remind you of the Lickety Split Sex Advice Podcast Voicemail Hotline at 866-422-5680. This is a no-pressure, voicemail kind of setup. No human will answer your call, least of all me. So don't be shy, my pretties. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Okay, on with the show. Our first correspondent is Wayne. He's 26 and he writes from Philadelphia. Hey, Dr. Dick, I have a little issue that has stumped me, my doctors, and numerous urologists. I figure there's no harm in asking one more person. I've never, not once, been able to come normally. I suppose there is a normal way, considering that every other guy I've ever met has been able to do it this way. The only way I've ever reached an orgasm is by laying on my stomach, putting pressure with a slightly closed fist on the spot where my dick meets the rest of my body and sliding back and forth. Weirdness aside, this was a way to lift myself off the floor and fly as a young kid, when one day I found out that it was really pleasurable. I know, weird little boy. But this is anonymous, right? Anyway, fast forward to my 20s and becoming sexually active, and now I have a concern. I want to be able to come by having intercourse or just jacking off, but I've never been able to. I can come very close, but the deal just doesn't happen. Never have a problem getting hard. Any thoughts? Thanks for your time, Wayne. Interesting masturbation technique you've got there, my friend. While it is unique, it is not the most distinctive style I've ever encountered in my career. Sometimes I think I ought to write a book. What's most amazing to me about what you write here is that this predicament of yours has stumped all the physicians you've consulted. I suppose that really says volumes about how informed most doctors are about human sexuality. Simply put, Wayne, over the years, you have habituated your body to respond pleasurably to a particular kind of stimulus. Ever hear of Pavlov's dogs? Right. What we have here is precisely the same thing. You apply the stimulus, lying on your stomach, putting pressure with a slightly closed fist on the spot where your dick meets the rest of your body and sliding back and forth. And your body responds with an orgasm. Okay, no great mystery there. Most of us, both female and male, discover the joys of self-pleasuring accidentally. Your first encounter with masturbation, although you probably didn't know what it was called back then, was through your boyhood attempts to fly. And fly you did. As you suggest, most other people discover self-pleasuring in a more conventional sort of way, through touch. Thus, the more normal, and I use that word in quotes, means of getting oneself off is manually. Your unique style of self-pleasuring is completely benign, but it doesn't really lend itself to partnered sex, as you suggest. I mean, how awkward would fucking be if you had to get off your partner and onto the floor to come? So, is there a solution? Sure there is, and it's not a particularly difficult nut to crack, so to speak. Let me tell you about a former client of mine. He was about your age when we met several years ago. He presented a similar concern to yours. He learned to masturbate in the same position as you, lying on his stomach, but he got off by humping a pillow in that position. Try as he might, he was never able to get off in any other way. This was driving him crazy. He couldn't date anyone because he was too embarrassed about the whole pillow thing. Over the next 4 or 5 weeks, I helped my client learn a new way of self-pleasuring that would lend itself to happy partnered sex. The object was to rid himself of the need for the pillow altogether, and we did this in incremental steps. Lucky for me, my client was a horny little bugger. He masturbated at least twice a day, sometimes even more frequently. I decided to use his natural horniness as part of my intervention. My client had to promise me that he wouldn't masturbate in his traditional way for an entire week. Absolutely no pillow sex for the whole week. If he failed to keep his promise, he would have to start all over from day one. At first, he couldn't see the purpose in this moratorium, but I insisted. By the time I saw him next, the poor boy had blue balls for days. So he was primed and ready to go. His next exercise was to change position for his first masturbation after the week-long moratorium. He could masturbate with his pillow, but he had to lie on his back. He was not permitted to roll over onto his stomach. This wasn't immediately successful, but his pent-up sexual energy finally carried the day, and he got off in a new position on his back the first time since he learned how to masturbate. I gave him a new exercise the following week. While on his back, he could use the pillow to rub himself, but only to the point where he was about to come. At that point, he was to put the pillow aside and finish himself off with his hand. This was only slightly more difficult than the previous exercise, and within 2 or 3 attempts, he finally got himself off with his hand for the first time in his life. The rest of the therapeutic intervention was simply following this behavior modification course of action until he didn't need a pillow at all. I assume you see where we're going with this, Wayne, right? You could do this same sort of intervention on your own and learn a new and more traditional way of masturbating. But you probably have much more success working with a certified sex therapist. Why not look for one near you by visiting the American College of Sexologists online? The firm desire to change a behavior or a habit is the most important aspect of the process of change. Second is denying yourself the convenient and habitual stimulus. In your case, your flying masturbation style will drive you to find a replacement means of getting off, a more traditional manual style. Weaning yourself off one style of masturbation incrementally till you are successful in replacing that style with another is the most efficient means of behavior change. I encourage you to give it a try. Good luck! Say, Dr. Dick, what's that toll-free podcast voicemail telephone number? Why, it's 866-422-5680. 866-422-5680. Don't be shy. Let it fly. Next, we hear from Shauna. She's 38, and she writes from Des Moines, Iowa, don't you know? She writes, I work with this really terrific girl who's around 10 years younger than I am. Lately, even though I'm happily married, I find myself awkwardly attracted to her. I'm actually masturbating while fantasizing about her. Like I said, I'm married to a really great guy and I don't want to hurt him, but I have to get advice on this. I'm so confused. Anytime there is a noticeable change in one's eroticism, Regardless at what age it happens, the shift can be disconcerting. Here you are, a mature, confirmed, card-carrying, straight, married lady who has an unanticipated crush on a much younger female coworker. That can't be sitting very well with your button-down world there in the heartland, huh? I suppose you could view this as a major problem, or you could accept this as a gift. That's right, a gift. This surprising event, even at your seriously advanced age of 38, indicates to me that you are still growing. Personally, I think that's wonderful. The fates have gifted you with this sweet, young, sexy female muse. You can either reject the fates and deny yourself, or embrace this opportunity to explore the yet uncharted aspects of your sexuality. Even if you never act on your same-sex impulses, I think it's safe to say that you are finally encountering your latent bisexuality. Don't be too surprised by that. Most of us are naturally bisexual in one fashion or another. Unfortunately, our sex-negative society discourages and disallows these very natural tendencies. So when they pop up, as they often do, we are unprepared to accept and welcome them. Will you cave in to the pressures of the popular culture, or buck the social trend? I'm in no position to guess. All I know is that this relatively benign sexual adventure could be an opportunity to expand your sexual options. Like I said, there are several ways to proceed. You could deny yourself the adventure and sublimate your desires. I don't recommend this because it rarely works. Healthy, natural feelings like the ones you're having can fester and embitter the one who's doing the self-denial. Another option is to go with your fantasies, enjoy them for what it's worth. Keep your bisexuality fantasy material, keeps you safe, and pretty much maintains the status quo. Then there's the option of pursuing your fantasy and making it a reality. Obviously, this option carries the greatest potential for disrupting your life. If you choose the path of keeping your bisexual urges fantasy, you could at least pursue them to the point of discovering if you are attracted to other women. If you're not, and your Jones is only about this charming young coworker of yours, you might simply be a situational bisexual. Regardless, if you are a real bisexual or a situational bisexual, imagine the fun you're going to have with your little secret. My only caution would be to treat your coworker in a way that you would treat any other coworker you might have a crush on. The best thing to do is to do nothing. Workplace flings of any stripe rarely turn out happily. And of course, you also have your marriage to consider. Fantasies are fine as long as they don't fuck up your real-life relationships. One thing, don't automatically assume that your husband would be put off by your newly acquired sexual tastes. That is, if you ever choose to tell him. It might be an actual turn-on for him. Most straight guys get off on the idea of two women together. Some husbands even tolerate their wives' occasional bisexual encounters. I guess maybe they just want them to tell them all about it once it's finished. Your husband might even be interested in a threesome with you and some other chick somewhere down the line. Again, I advise that it not be your co-worker, though. In the end, this is an exciting time for you, Shauna. It's challenging, for sure, but it's also very rewarding. Good luck. Hey, Dr. Dick, what is that toll-free podcast voicemail telephone number again? Why, it's 866-422-5680. 866-422-5680. Next, we hear from Jim. He's 30. He writes from Washington, USA. I suppose that's Washington State. Yay. He writes, I am uncircumcised with about 1 inch of foreskin overhang. I have never seen another man with any longer hood. I get a lot of smegma built up after a day of sweating and pissing, and by the end of the day, I can smell my ripe hooded cock. Is this normal to get so much build up? Everybody's body is different. The length of your foreskin may not be the only thing that distinguishes you from everyone else. Some people, and you may be one of them, have overactive glands that can contribute to distinctive body odors. This is a holdover, of course, from our pre-human ancestors. In the animal kingdom, strong odors signify virility and definitely contribute to mating success. Things are quite different in our modern human society, however. Strong body odor suggests poor hygiene to most, rather than virility, and it will absolutely sabotage mating success. Problem odor is most often associated with the musky areas of the human body, underarms, crotch, and feet. But some people have problem odors in their mouth, sinuses, and scalp. Sometimes these problem odors are associated with an infection or another health concern. But generally speaking, strong body odor is associated with inadequate hygiene. Uncut men need to pay particular attention to cleaning their cock. If you're not careful to completely retract your heavy hood when you shower or bathe every single day, you will have a problem with odor. Poor hygiene can also contribute to something much more serious like phimosis. The popular wisdom about cleaning under your foreskin is that soap is unnecessary. A full rinsing with warm water should be sufficient. If soap is desired, one ought to use a very mild hypoallergenic soap for this delicate area. Either way, fully retracting your foreskin is essential. I'd also encourage you to retract your foreskin when you take a leak. That way you won't have that icky, pissy smell about you. Finally, there's an awful lot of evidence that shows a direct connection between one's diet and one's personal odor. If you continue to have a problem beyond the hygiene issues that we just talked about, avoid refined sugar, white flour, hydrogenated oils, and other processed foods. Cut back on red meat consumption, alcohol, and caffeine, too. A diet high in fiber, one that has lots of whole grains, leafy vegetables, sprouts, fresh fruits, soy products, raw nuts, is your best bet for regaining a more acceptable smell. Good luck. Hey, Dr. Dick. What's that toll-free podcast voicemail telephone number again? It's toll-free, right? Yes, it is. It's 866-422-5680. Don't be shy. Let it fly. Next, we hear from Karen. She's 36, and she writes from Portland. I have a really big problem. I can't keep a girlfriend because once I'm in a committed relationship, I lose my desire for sex. I don't mean it slacks off, it just totally stops. I've always been this way. I can have casual sex with women, but when things get serious, sex goes out the window. This has been the demise of every relationship I've ever had. I'm currently dating this really great woman, but I'm afraid my problem will drive her away too. Is there anything I can do to stop this from happening? Ah, another case of dreaded lesbian bed death. It's pretty common for most folks in long-term relationships, but lesbians in particular, to gradually lose interest in sex with one another. Some couples, but lesbians in particular, end all sexual expression between them, yet they stay very committed and loving toward each other. Thus, the somewhat humorous term, lesbian bed death. You, Karen, apparently suffer from a particularly nasty case of LBD. May I ask, is this an issue for you because, and only because, it kills off your relationships way too soon? Or are you concerned about this because you yourself are uneasy about the complete cessation of sex once you nest? The reason I ask is that if your only reason for changing is to please someone else, even someone you like a lot, the likelihood that you'll actually change is considerably less than if you yourself desire change. Let's say you really want to change for yourself, but you just don't know how. I would advise working with a sex-positive therapist. Check out the American College of Sexologists online and see if there is a certified sex therapist near you. If you and I were working together, I'd want to get to the bottom of what triggers your attitude change toward sex once you nest. Is there some disconnect for you between sex and intimacy? If there is such a disconnect for you, you're not alone. People with self-esteem issues or body issues, people with extreme scruples about sex, the kind that translates into guilt and shame, often have this same kind of disconnect. And gay and lesbian people who have not resolved their internalized homophobia will frequently have this sex and intimacy disconnect. If this is the case for you, this is not insurmountable, but it will take a concerted effort to heal the rift that you may have between your sexual expression and your intimacy needs. You say you've met this really great woman and that you want this relationship to last. Excellent. Is it safe to assume that she has a healthier appreciation of sex than you? If she does, I suggest that you engage her in your healing process. However, you're going to need to be totally upfront with her about your past pattern of disconnect. Marshal her sex-positive energy to help you resolve your issues. If she has a heads up on the impending sex shutdown, she could help you resist it. And with her help, the two of you could move through it. Whatever you do, don't let your bad case of dreaded lesbian bed death come to her as a surprise. Good luck. Hey, Dr. Dick, what is that toll-free podcast voicemail telephone number? Why, it's 866-422-5680. Okay, finally, we have Julian from Mexico City. He's 42, and he has a simple question. What does CBT mean? Geez, CBT could mean a lot of things depending on the context. It could stand for cognitive behavioral therapy, something the good doctor knows a great deal about. It could also stand for computer-based training. But why in the world would you be asking Dr. Dick about that? Let me see what else. CBT also stands for cock and ball torture. Yeah, that's it. That's what you want to know about. Huh, Julian, you little pervert. There are all manner of torture techniques for your cock and balls. Slapping, squeezing, pinching, bondage, the use of weights, even tickling can be a form of torture. A dude's cock and balls can stand a great deal of torment. But doling out professional-grade torture is not for the amateur. The dom really needs to know what he or she is doing. Carelessness can lead to severe injury. In some cases, torture is really mostly just play. The cock and balls are simply tugged on or stretched out, maybe with some weights. There's cock and ball bondage, the family jewels trussed up like a Thanksgiving turkey. And that's just the beginning. Imagine what you could do with mother's old clothespins. Oh, and the T word doesn't necessarily always stand for torture. It can represent a full range of play, from tickling and teasing to torment and torture. If you're interested in investigating the pain pleasure of cock and ball torture for yourself, Julian, here's a safe way to start. Begin with different sensations. Look around the house for things that you can brush or rub against your cock and balls. Start, of course, with something soft, like a silk scarf. Progressively work your way to something more rough, like a scrub brush. You will notice that the sensations are different when your dick is soft, as opposed to when it's hard. Try a hollowed-out loofah sponge. Get it good and wet and slip it over your cock and try masturbating with it. Say, rubber bands can be stretched tight over your cock and balls, not only for the constriction, which is so delightful, but you can snap those puppies for delicious pain. Lots of pervs like cock and ball spanking. Try your hand at this, or a kitchen spoon or spatula works really nice too. Prickly things like a fork can be used to scrape or drag over your cock and balls. Poke them lightly if you'd like. Just be careful, you do not want to draw blood. Cock and ball bondage can be a delight. Nylon rope is a good choice for this, but nothing beats 100% cotton clothesline. If you want something a bit more abrasive, try a little something in the hemp rope department. Again, safe play is happy play. Wrap the rope around your cock and around each of your balls. Use the rope to stretch your sack as far as it feels comfortable. A little discomfort, of course, is desirable. Just remember that the sensations will become more intense as your dick engorges with blood. This kind of play ought not be done for more than 10 minutes at a time. Watch for when your dick is veering to the color purple, or your balls are getting cool to the touch. When this happens, it's time to stop and move on to something else for a while. If you're really getting into this, you can find loads of more professional torture implements at Dr. Dick's Stockroom. Look for the link on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com that reads, Dr. Dick's Sex Toys and Props. There, you'll find a whole department in the stockroom devoted to just cock and ball toys. You might want to start with a cock and ball harness. Doesn't that sound like fun? Cock and ball torture is great for livening up and extending a ho-hum jerk-off session. Once a guy has a grip on what he likes and how he likes it, he can turn his partner on to the practices. Speaking of partners, the novice perv might do well to consider surrendering his beautiful genitalia to a professional dom. A well-trained mistress or master will be able to take you places you've only dreamed about. A pro dom is also a great resource for the do-it-yourself kind of guy. Before you launch into uncharted waters, seek the advice of someone who has made the study of pain pleasure his or her life's work. Cock and ball play can be loads of fun, alone or with others. Just remember the mantra, safe play is happy play. Experimenting is fine, but if you get in over your head and you don't know what the fuck you're doing, stop. Then go back to something more suitable to your skill set. Good luck. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad that you could join me. Tune in next week for more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to the amazing technology of AEBN.net, you will be able to watch loads of really swell educational, enriching, and entertaining videos from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of DrDicksSexAdvice.com. Look for the link that reads, Dr. Dick's How-To Videos. Hey, it's not free, but you probably already figured that out, huh? This super-duper video on demand is all yours when you purchase a wad of minutes at a really low price. Once inside, you'll be directed to buy a pay-for-view package that suits you. And of course, you can buy additional minutes anytime your little heart desires. Then, just pick out a video out of the thousands and thousands of titles, sit back, drop your drawers, and put a smile on your face. It's that simple. There's no membership fee. This is a pay-per-minute kind of deal. Remember that your pay-for-view minutes allow you to watch whatever content you want for whatever length of time you choose. Before I go, I want to call your attention once again to the lickety-split connection at DrDicksSexAdvice.com. Remember, folks, no one's going to personally answer your phone call because it's voicemail. That's right, Dr. Dick is offering you a toll-free podcast voicemail phone number to call in your questions. You do want to be in one of my podcasts, don't you? Call now. The number, 866-422-5680. Again, the toll-free voicemail number is 866-422-5680. And look for Dr. Dick's podcast on iTunes and sexaudia.com. On iTunes, you will find me in the podcast section under Health Subcategory Sexuality, or just search for Dr. Dick Sex Advice. Hey, and don't forget to subscribe. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex is even better. Over and out.